What does it mean to have government transparency and accountability? We know that our country was founded on the idea of an open, honest, and accountable government. But what does that look like? What information should our government be obliged to share with citizens, and how? I'm Cindy Hahn. According to the Center for Public Integrity's most recent study, Maine ranks quite low in how well states operate in an open and transparent manner. In fact, we ranked 43rd and got a failing grade of F. The study pointed to weak laws in Maine that are not keeping up with the prevailing standards for transparency and accountability in government. This ties into a current debate over electronic access to court records here in Maine, bringing up the tricky balance between transparency and privacy. Public information and how we access it. Maine Calling is next, but first this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. In 1913, in an article for Harper's Magazine titled What Publicity Can Do, future Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis wrote, "Sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants." Today, we're going to discuss that idea of shining light to prevent wrongdoing and how that relates to transparency in Maine state government. With me in the studio, Sig Schutz. He's a partner with Preddy Flaherty and a First Amendment attorney. Mal Leary is also with me. He's president of the National Freedom of Information Coalition and a senior political correspondent right here at Maine Public. On the line with us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. is Keisha Weir. She's state politics editor with the Center for Public Integrity. Thank you all for joining us today. As always, we want to hear from you. How important is transparency to you when it comes to the business of government? Please share your comments and questions. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And Keisha, I just wanted to start with you. You're with the Center for Public Integrity. What exactly does integrity mean when it comes to government, and how does that relate to transparency?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And not everybody agrees entirely what integrity means in government. But in 2015, we did a massive investigation with another nonprofit called Global Integrity. And we looked at 13 areas for each state, trying to figure out what measures they had in place to protect against corruption and make sure that the public had the information they needed. And we looked at everything from access to information, political finance, executive accountability, legislative accountability, the judiciary, whether there was controls on the pensions, procurement, whether there were ethic oversights. And we looked at, I think it was 245 specific measures to kind of assess how transparent is government. So, you know, we came up with this rubric to kind of figure out what it looks like across the states.
And how did Maine look on that measure?
Well, I'm sorry, Maine, you all did not do very well. Out of all the 50 states, Maine came in 43rd place and got an F letter grade. So if we did, you know, A, B, C, D, E, you know, F the way you would in school, Maine got a failing grade. But the good news is for Maine, you had a lot of company. A lot of the other states also did pretty badly. Only 3 states scored higher than a D+.
Okay.
And your neighbors in Maine, in New Hampshire and Vermont, were only slightly better than you guys did.
All right. We'll talk more about why and how we did so poorly and how that compares with other states. But Mal, I just wanted to hear from you a little bit about sort of the background to freedom of information in this country. What's the history on FOIA, and how does that relate to Maine?
Well, the history here in Maine is very interesting. It goes back to when Ed Muskie was governor, was the first time there was an attempt to come up with public records, open meetings law. And it actually was co-authored by a professor at the University of Maine, Brooks Hamilton, who we kind of look upon in this state as the father of the FOIA Act. And it had a wonderful preamble that said everything is presumed to be covered by this law in terms of records and documents and open meetings, except if the legislature specifically exempts it. So that has been the starting point back there in 1959. The law has evolved over the years. There's been hundreds of exemptions added to the law. Some of them I would take issue with. Others I think are quite justified. For example, when you have an ongoing criminal investigation, those records are not public. They are protected until the crime is adjudicated. That makes perfect sense, I think, to even those of us who are pretty strong advocates. Here in Maine, as you just heard, we've got a very mixed record. We've had some successes. For example, we have an advisory committee that screens all proposals to exempt the law, knowing many other states wish they had that same sort of process, because while it doesn't provide the passage of legislation you would like, it prevents an awful lot of bad legislation from happening in the first place. So that's, I think, one of our strongest points, is that has been in effect now for some 15 years.
So we started out as somewhat of a leader in transparency. Are you surprised to hear that grade that Keisha just mentioned of an F for Maine?
Oh, not at all. I've been fighting this battle for my entire career. I remember well back when Governor, now Senator Angus King, was governor, we got successfully passed a bill that said anytime a governor created a study group by executive order, it would be subject to the law, except if the governor specifically exempted it and gave a reason why. And Governor King at the time, now Senator King, brought me in the office. He says, why should I sign this? You know I'm going to make all of these open. And I said, very simple. You're not going to be governor forever. And he laughed and he signed the bill. So we've made some progress over the years.
Okay. And you've been there through the years, Sig, as an attorney who's often tapped by the media to help in cases of access to information.
More times than he would wish, I think, sometimes.
You're the go-to guy for that. What are the some of the most common transparency issues that you have seen?
Probably the most common issue is overbroad interpretation of exceptions to the Act, and where government uses an exemption that's intended to narrowly apply to specific categories of records to justify withholding large quantities of records that really don't fall within the exemption. Other problems are delays in access. The statute doesn't set a firm deadline to comply with requests for public records. It simply requires a response within a reasonable period of time. So you end up with delays of weeks, months, or even longer in some instances.
Years.
Even years. The Act also doesn't set firm caps on the fees that can be charged for access to copies of public records. So there have been instances where state agencies have attempted to charge hundreds or thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars for public records, or agencies have attempted to charge per-page fees for records available in digital format. If the record's available electronically, of course, a per-page fee makes absolutely no sense.
Are there other issues involving things like public meetings? I know that in Wells, I think there was a very recent case where the school committee was discussing something and didn't sort of do it publicly enough.
Well, the Wells school committee issue was whether an advisory board charged with making a recommendation whether the high school should change its mascot could vote by secret ballot. And that's sort of a core no-no in public meetings law. Public officials, even volunteer public officials, appointed public officials, as well as elected public officials, can't vote in secret. Other areas of problems of public meetings, one of the more common areas is overbroad use of executive sessions. Executive sessions used to discuss personnel matters, where the discussion veers off into policy matters or substantive matters before the body. Yeah, there are a range of difficulties with executive sessions. I mean, a lot of small Maine communities justifiably can't afford to have a lawyer present, sort of policing their meetings or advising them as meetings unfold, and so they're left to make their own interpretations. And sometimes they should be discussing in open session stuff that ends up getting talked over in secret.
Keisha, when you hear these examples, how is Maine typical of other states? I know you're saying that all 50 states have their own issues. Or are these rules and ways that it's being approached different from state to state?
You know, every state is different, but they're all different in ways that are not that helpful to the public, to be honest. So, you know, in Maryland, if you want to get a, you know, financial disclosure of a, of an official, you have to drive to Annapolis in person and pick it up. They won't give it to you even by email or fax or anything like that. In Massachusetts, you need to show your driver's license to get some documents, and then they notify the person whose documents if it's a financial disclosure. Open meetings laws are an issue that reporters around the country can tell you that they grapple with. Whether it's covering a planning board, a school board, or even, you know, some committee hearings, a lot of backroom dealings happen in the legislatures around the country that are not accessible to the public. So this is, you know, Maine, I'm sorry, you guys are again, not alone in this kind of stuff. A lot of states really have, in some areas, they're really strong, but in a lot of places, there are a lot of weaknesses in these transparency measures.
And we're talking about transparency sort of with this, you know, bent that it, open government is a good thing. But there are challenges and there are objections to transparency. Right, Mel? Do you see that?
Well, we get that pushback all the time from particularly from government agencies. The favorite ploy of them is to say it's a draft document, which just drives me nuts because it's public record, it's a public record, period. And when you just stamp draft on it, that doesn't mean anything. Any document that's been developed by a government agency in conducting their work is able for the public to read and see, unless there's been a specific exemption about that in state law. So we fight that battle constantly. We fight pushback from the highest levels. Governor LePage, when he ran for governor, said he would have the most open and transparent administration in history. Yet he is the first governor to actually be fined by the court for not following the public meetings law when he closed an education commission meeting that was being held at the Blaine House, saying that it was a private meeting, but it was a group that was a public body set up to recommend policies to change educational policy here in Maine. So, yeah, we've had our share of battles here, too.
And is it worse or better than in the past? Is there a trend?
I think the trend is mixed. We've had, over the 15 years of the Right to Know Advisory Committee, there have been some real accomplishments there. For example, requiring that elected officials go through training in the law. That was never done before. Now they have to, from the governor on down to every legislator. So there's been some progress, but then you have, excuse me, this pushback that has occurred by various state agencies. SIG's been involved in some of them directly in the cases where, for example, the Warden Service withheld documents about the filming of a television show that featured the game wardens for months and months and months. And then when they released them, there were information that was redacted that shouldn't have been redacted. So, I mean, we fight these battles both ways. And, you know, we have some victories, but we have a lot of failures.
Okay. And there is one of the reasons we're timing this show for today is there is a hearing over electronic court records being accessible to the public. Did you, Sig, can you explain what that issue is all about?
Yes. Well, the judicial branch, the Maine judicial branch, got a $15 million appropriation to create a fully electronic case management system that will allow online access, that is access over the internet, to all public court records, or that could allow same. The court is considering the extent to which the public would be allowed to access public court records online. That seemed to be the entire purpose of this $15 million project, but task force, sort of a blue ribbon panel appointed by the court, has made a recommendation that would substantially limit public access to court records. It would block access to virtually all records filed with the court, with only certain narrow categories of records made public. So this is a huge issue. This is the number one government transparency issue in Maine. It affects the entire branch of government, the judicial branch. And it would have the effect of allowing access to the lawyers but preventing access to the public, to the news media, to legislators, to researchers, to average citizens who may have reason to look at public court records. Now, these records would still be available at the courthouse, just as they were, you know, in 1820, but they wouldn't be available online. And of course, the internet's now the dominant means of accessing information about everything. And the federal courts have been online for about 20 years. So this system would improve access, but it would sort of get us from, you know, walking to horse and buggy when the system could allow us to get on the bullet train.
Okay. we'll talk about that a little more after the break, but actually first I just wanted to hear from Keisha about that. Is this type of thing happening elsewhere with online access kind of becoming an issue?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of places are getting better on the online access, whether it's court records or other kinds of public disclosures. But it's pretty striking how the advances that you would expect, given how internet dependent we all are not necessarily being seen in government. So, for example, we did a big project where we pulled all the financial disclosures of legislators around the country, and it's 7,000 plus legislators. Now, only Delaware actually had all of that data in a format that was the way anyone who works with data would actually keep it. So we had to convert Delaware's data into a whole nother format, so into like a PDF, so that it could be like all the other states, which is kind of remarkable. And in terms of, I think you guys have just talked about the federal records for courts are public. And so it's not impossible to do this in a way that keeps the integrity of the judiciary system. That's the, I think the argument that's often made is that, well, we need to have them acquired in person so that we can protect who sees them and protect their privacy. But the federal model on a lot of this stuff already has paved the way. So you have that kind of contradiction that it's happening on the federal level. Why is it so different on the states?
Okay, lots to talk about there, but we'll just take a quick break first. And when we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Dehan Wealth Advisors, an independently owned wealth management firm providing investment advice to individuals, families, and institutions. Information at DEIGHAN.com. And adventure-bound rafting, whitewater rafting, stand-up paddle boards, hiking, and camping vacations for youth and families. AdventureboundRafting.com.
I'm Razia Iqbal. In a time of fast-developing news and headlines, NewsHour is there to help you make sense of a complex world.
This is an historic victory and what is a very important day.
This could change world history.
Everybody's going to pay a price. You will, everybody will.
And I am just so happy to be home and to put my feet on this land again.
Another huge development.
That's NewsHour from the BBC.
Weekday mornings at 9 o'clock and weekends at 4 p.m. here on Maine Public Radio.
June 12th is primary day, as Mainers choose the Democratic candidate for the 2nd Congressional District seat and Democratic and Republican nominees for governor. Maine Public News brings you Your Vote 2018, a primary election resource providing a helpful comparison and trusted context you need to make an informed decision. Join us for the hour-long Your Vote 2018 candidate profiles at 2 p.m. weekdays through Thursday, June 7th, or online anytime at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, government transparency. Joining me, Sig Schutz is a partner with Preddy Flaherty and a First Amendment attorney. Mal Leary is president of the National Freedom of Information Coalition and a senior political correspondent here at Maine Public. And on the line with us is Keisha Weir. She's state politics editor with the Center for Public Integrity. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And on the line with us now is Michael Chinquette. He was former chief counsel to Governor LePage, and he's a Bangor Daily News columnist. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And I just wanted to hear, you were sort of on the other side of this conversation inside the government. So give us a sense of what transparency looks like from that direction.
Yeah, you know, that's it's a great question, and Mal can correct me where he deems appropriate, but we actually had served on the Right to Know Advisory Committee together.
Yes.
You know, and one of the things about from the public service side is, I think you'd find, most people who work for government would fully agree. Yeah, transparency is an important part, but it's a part. Everyone in the government, particularly in Maine, which generally has, lower staffing levels throughout, municipalities, counties, and at the state level, have normal jobs to do in addition to responding to public records requests. When you get into the state house, the throes of legislative session with thousands of legislative proposals bouncing around, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, being spent through the budgetary process, it's a very kind of high tempo environment. And where public records and responding to those requests fit in is one of those questions. With Mal, with Steve Missler, who is now, of course, with Maine Public, but was with a prior news organization, at least when I was coordinating records requests for the governor's office, and again, Mal can correct me, I think we had a fairly reasonable kind of understanding, and if he had a particular document he was looking for, we could generally turn that around quickly. But one of the challenges with kind of increasing polarization, partisan politics and all these other things, is that access requests can be a weapon. The amount of correspondence that people get in their everyday email inbox, and this applies to the government just like it does in our personal accounts and business accounts and so forth, is massive. And when someone sends in a request saying, I want every email that references the word hospital, that can add up to tens of thousands of emails within a short time frame. And each one of those needs to be reviewed individually because it may say, I need family medical leave because my mother's in the hospital, which, of course, is a confidential piece of information under Maine law. So it's a sticky wicket, and how exactly you solve it is, I think, still outstanding.
So in those cases with those FOIA requests, did you feel like those are intentionally being abused, or just people don't realize the logistics of being able to get back to these people?
There's some of both. Generally, when you talk to someone and kind of explain the breadth of the request, people like Mal and others, particularly in the media, but also in some of the interest groups, would say, well, here's really what I'm looking for. And as they narrow down that funnel, it becomes much easier to respond kind of in a timely manner. But other groups have basically said, well, we're well-funded, and to Sig's earlier point, the government can charge for records requests, and it's somewhat discretionary and somewhat bounded by statute. But some of them are very happy to ask for these massive requests and kind of bog down the other operations of state government, which is where, questions about how long does it take to respond, kind of pop up.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that transparency and confidentiality come into conflict? This is something you've written about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the questions, and I think, Cindy, you mentioned it in the lead-in. Where is the line between those two things? And, for example, using the governor's office, hypothetically, let's say next year, whoever the governor is, we've got plenty of candidates, we have a budgetary crisis and there's a massive shortfall. Well, that governor will need to decide, okay, how am I going to address this? Am I going to reduce services? Am I going to increase taxes? What are the pros and cons of each? And, one of the things Mal mentioned is, just because you stamp draft on it, that doesn't do anything. But how do you give a governor or another decision maker good, credible information on pros and cons as they try to make the decision they're elected to make, if everyone's breathing down your neck, asking for full requests, asking for, what's the governor looking at? It creates a challenge.
Okay, thanks, Mike, for joining us today. Michael Chinquette was former chief counsel to Governor LePage, and he's a Bangor Daily News columnist. Mal, we were just talking earlier about the case about the court records and all of that, and I know one of the biggest objections that people have is the privacy question. What do you, I mean, isn't this making people's information available online much, that can be problematic?
Well, that's what the argument is, but the reality is that information is public now. All you have to do is go to a courthouse and ask for it. My point, and I served on the task force named by the Chief Justice, and in fact, I served on both task forces. There was a previous one dealing with electronic court records that I also served on. The reality here is a public record is a public record is a public record, whether it's in paper form or whether it's electronic. There should not be a distinction. And when you try to draw that distinction, I think you're trying to make a distinction without a difference. The question that's brought up on privacy and confidentiality should go to whether the record itself should ever be public. I'll give you an example. On the Right to Know Committee, as Mike Trinquette talked about, we had a request come from the Secretary of State that on their records of a person's license that they make public, if the person had been subject to a protection from abuse order and was fearing for their lives in many cases or their bodily harm, then their home address could be kept off that database. And the committee was unanimous in saying, yes, that's a legitimate use of the discretion of the legislature, and the legislature agreed. But that's an individual case. It's not everybody simply saying, oh, we want it private because we don't want someone to know where our home address is. It was for a specific reason that was justified. We have a balancing test on the Right to Know Advisory Committee where we look at balancing that all the time, balancing the public's right to know with the individual private interest. And, you know, when you're talking about some things, it's easy. We're talking about budgets. How are you going to spend the taxpayers' money? I don't think there's any disagreement that those records are public and should be made public. When you start getting into, for example, a divorce matter where you're getting into the finances of a family, the courts have already taken action sealing a lot of that information on a case-by-case basis. So I think, you know, there is a balancing act that always goes on, both in creating laws and by the courts when they are looking at records before them. They already have the power, judge already has a power to seal a record and say why.
I guess this points to that we sort of need to go all the way back to the beginning and say why transparency is important more broadly for our nation. Keisha, do you want to take a stab at sort of the philosophical underpinnings of why the public has a right to know this information?
Yeah, well, I think it gets back to that, you know, 1913 wonderful quote that sunlight is the best disinfectant. I think, you know, as a reporter, having more information available to me helps me be able to tell a more complete story. And I think members of the public often feel that way as well. And that they're, if you are hiding something, that makes people perceive that there is a problem, even if there is not a problem. And so I think it's that kind of idea of making sure that people can understand what's happening, can have all of the information in front of them, and not feel like someone is trying to prevent them from knowing it, because that then raises the suspicions.
Okay. And we're going to go ahead to a call now. Donna in Bar Harbor. Hi, Donna. You're on the line. What's your question?
My question is somewhat in the area of privacy, and because I try my best to be transparent, I will say I am an elected member of a committee we have here in Bar Harbor called the Warrant Committee. I live here as a private citizen and vote in Bar Harbor. And my question is, we have bylaws that are in our town charter for the Warrant Committee, which says a meeting for our subcommittee, one of the subcommittees in which I'm on, three members present is a quorum. Therefore, there has to be public notice as to when the meeting occurs. And I agree entirely with this, that it's wonderful to be transparent, and I love the public to come and be involved and hear and know what we're doing. But my question is, what is the line when it's a small community and I am a private citizen who on some issues that do come before the town and do come before the Warrant Committee In terms of warrant articles, the warrant committee reviews all articles that go before the voters of Bar Harbor. My question is, my intention is to be a private citizen working on some social, political, community issues, if I am just meeting with citizens and it's not a meeting, it's not a formal meeting, I'm not meeting deliberately with two other members of my subcommittee to specifically discuss matters of the public business before us, before we voted an advisory opinion, which does appear on our town ballot. My question is it okay for me to meet as a private citizen with various groups of people, most of whom are not on this warrant committee or any committee of Bar Harbor, and do my own actions that might be making a phone call, making a flyer, maybe collecting signatures for citizens' petitions. If I am just doing this on my own and it's not a formal matter before me as a warrant committee member, are all those records, emails, phone calls, am I required to make these public or accessible to the public if a citizen requests them?
Okay, Donna, let's see what Sig, if you have some answers for Donna.
Well, Donna, thank you for your service on the committee, and so much of Maine's business is done by volunteers like you. But by agreeing to serve on a committee like that with the town, you are subjecting yourself to public records and public meetings laws. Of course, your meetings with those folks are not subject to public meetings laws. You can certainly meet with them. But when you have in your possession or records come into your possession that relate to the transaction of business before the committee on which you serve, those records would fall within the scope of the Freedom of Access Act. And that would be a question that would be worth raising, you know, with the town council, legal counsel, to get some guidance for your board so that people can understand how best to proceed and where the line might be drawn between records that are public and records that are not.
Okay, thanks for your call, Donna. Good luck with that. We have an email from Bob. He says, it is clear that there is a direct relationship between the lack of transparency and ethics leading to the Center for Public Integrity's overall score of F in Maine and numerous political impediments to genuine democracy. This has been revealed by a host of legislative actions and inactions that result in the denial of the will of the people. A recent example is LD 1781, Corporate Welfare for General Dynamics, an issue profoundly underreported by Maine public. Mal, why don't you take that one?
Well, I would disagree with his comment that it was underreported because I did some of that reporting. So in full disclosure, I kind of have a conflict on that particular question about General Dynamics and Bath Iron Works. But the question becomes the process by which that committee met, in this case it was the Taxation Committee, they had to meet in public, and they did meet in public. And at the legislature, every time they hold a work session, there's public notice of that work session. All the votes of that committee had to be taken in public. Almost always, the members explain their votes, which is all part of the process. So I'm not sure what the concern is on this particular issue. The person probably objected to the tax break that was voted by the legislature, but it was done in the open by the Taxation Committee. Were the discussions behind closed doors? Yes, because the law allows the Democrats to meet separately and hold what's called a caucus, and the Republicans to hold a caucus. And that's been one of the things I've railed against for years. Because, for example, if you have the Democrats in control of both the House and Senate, when they're caucusing, you're talking about the folks who make the decisions being able to meet privately. So it's one of those holes in the law, if you will, that I personally object to, because it gets in the way of reporting what's really being discussed, because they may not really discuss the issue when they come out on microphone in the public session.
Okay, lots more to talk about, but we have to take another quick break. So when we come back, more of your comments and questions. You're listening to Maine Calling.
You make Maine calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communications systems. NorrisInc.com. And Finance Authority of Maine, working for Maine by helping businesses grow jobs and families reach their higher education goals. FameMaine.com. Between now and Thursday, June 7th, Maine Public Radio will present a series of special Your Vote 2018 primary candidate profiles in our 2 o'clock hour. On June 12th, Maine voters will choose Democratic and Republican nominees for governor and the Democratic candidate for the 2nd congressional seat. All of these candidate conversations are archived for your convenience at mainepublic.org/yourvote. Along with our debates for on-demand viewing, our television, radio on-air debate schedule, and the latest election news. Our next Your Vote 2000 candidate profile program features Sean Moody, Republican for governor, and Mark Dion, Democrat for governor. Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. June is once again Music That Moves Me Month. Throughout this month, you'll hear the stories of neighbors from all around Maine about music that has been inspiring in their life. And thanks to the Maine Community Foundation and Lee Auto Malls, we'll also be conducting another instrument donation drive for needy young would-be musicians. For more information about the drive, to hear any of the broadcast segments, to post your own story, or to learn how you can contribute next year, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Transparency and Government Accountability. In the studio with me, Sig Schutz. He's a partner with Preddy Flaherty and First Amendment attorney. Mal Leary is president of the National Freedom of Information Coalition and a senior political correspondent here at Maine Public. And on the line with us is Keisha Weir. She's state politics editor with the Center for Public Integrity. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-399-3566. And I think we were talking earlier about the public hearing, or mentioned the public hearing over this court records issue. Sig, did you want to give some more details about that, since it is public and we're talking about people participating in the process?
Sure. Well, it's not every day that the Maine Supreme Judicial Court holds a public hearing to solicit public input on rules before the court. I think the fact that the court has scheduled a hearing highlights the importance of this issue for the state of Maine and for the judicial branch. People who are concerned about it can actually appear 8:50 a.m. this Thursday at the Capitol Judicial Center in Augusta and let the clerk know that you'd like to be by the court. And I think the court's going to accommodate anyone who wants to express their views as long as you show up and register at 8:50 a.m. Thursday morning in Augusta.
Okay. And that brings up the idea of, how does the public get involved and access information? Is it difficult? Is that part of the problem? If somebody wants to get access to records, what do they do?
Well, go ahead, Mal.
Well, there's a number of letter-generating programs. We have them on our website. The State Public Access Ombudsman has it on her website in the Attorney General's office. It kind of guides you through making the request. And as Sig pointed out earlier, what's really important is to try to narrow the request to what you really want. I have a story I tell back when Steve Rowe was the Attorney General. He came to me and he said, we've got a request where somebody wants all the documents to do with the Indian land claims case. And if any of you recall that, it was a very major case that was settled by Congress in 1980. Well, I believe it was 6 or 7 filing cabinets full of material in the Attorney General's office when you take into account all the aspects of the case. Well, come to find out, the person was just researching water rights.
Oh.
And that was still a substantial request, but a lot smaller. But at the time, the Attorney General couldn't go back to that person and ask them, what are you really looking for? You just had to fulfill the request and not question why the person wanted it, which is one of the changes I think we made in the law to make it better, where the agency that's getting the request can go back to the individual and say, well, let's try to narrow this. What are you really looking for? What's the issue here? And try to focus down on the period of time that you're requesting and what those specific documents are. So it's a back and forth process that I think has worked well. It's worked well at many levels in state government. In fact, to talk about what Mike Gincheppo was talking about a few minutes ago. In his case, I mean, if it was clearly a public document, we often got it back in the email the same day. Mm-hmm. Other documents, that's another question. Sometimes it would take very long periods of time, and we never know because of the way the law is structured what is unreasonable. The only way to determine unreasonable is to have a judge determine unreasonable. And very frankly, most news organizations do not want to spend the money to go to court and challenge a case.
Keisha, what are some other examples of public records that people can access or that people don't know that they can access?
Sure. Well, we've already talked about court records, but another one that people can look at is the people who they've elected to office often file financial disclosure forms. So you can see what kinds of financial ties they have and whether that's interfering with any of the political work they do. As I said, we collected them for all the legislators around the country and put them into a searchable database. It's on our website if anyone wants to look up their Maine representative. And if you don't know your Maine representative, you can put in your address and it will tell you who your officials are. But there are so many kinds of documents. You can get emails for elected officials. You can ask for their schedules. You can ask for draft documents related to a study. So let's say there's an environmental study for a big project happening in your neighborhood. You can ask for that kind of information. Minutes to meetings can often be really informative as to what actually happened in a past meeting. There are lots of different ways you can get at this. And, you know, it's actually a really important part for the process of a reporter, but a lot of people use them who aren't reporters, whether they're, you know, looking at a legal case of their own, whether they're trying to change something in their community, whether they have a specific case in their own life. And it really is a helpful tool if you look at what the statutory laws are in your state, figure out what those are, and cite those in your record request and explain what you're looking for and be as specific as possible, because you can really get a lot of information that way.
And you mentioned some things like the governor's schedule, for example, that's supposed to be accessible. Is that an issue? What are the reasons that someone would or would not publish their schedule but also want to access it?
Sure. So, you know, let's say a governor is meeting with a number of special interests and they're meeting with them repeatedly before a new policy is put out. You may want to know when they're meeting and who they met with specifically. You know, we've seen examples where governors take trips that are paid for by a specific group. And then the governor comes back to their state and does that policy that group wanted. So having that level of information about where the governor has traveled to, what their upcoming schedule is, you know, it's not public record in every state, I don't believe, but in some states it certainly is because people believe that can be telling as to what government business the governor is up to.
Okay. One criticism that I've seen, at least written about, in terms of transparency and accountability is that it results in slower action. Either things get mired in bureaucracy or that just politicians sort of, these agencies have to deal with people's requests and demands, and then it sort of shields politicians in a way from having to act on them. Do you have anyone have to comment about that? Is that the case?
Well, I think some politicians might try to use it to do that. To go back to the comment a moment ago on the schedules of governors.
Mm-hmm.
In many states, it's like ours, where it is a public record, but because the law has no requirement on how fast the governor's office has to respond, you get the record weeks, months, or longer afterwards. So
too
you
late.
Know that the governor met with somebody 6 months ago, but you don't get the daily schedule of who he's meeting with or she's meeting with on that particular day, which is what, of course, is useful or something that's very quickly turned around. So, you know, there's a fundamental problem in our law in that we don't have a provision that allows someone who actually goes to court and wins to get their court costs and their lawyers paid for. Many states have that, and that has resulted in governments being a little bit more hesitant to try to use delaying tactics because they could end up having to pay the cost of doing that. That's one of the things I would like to see in our Maine law that we don't have now.
Okay. I'd like to add something.
Yeah, Keisha, go ahead.
I'm sorry. On the issue of the delays, just for some context, if you look at the amount of legislation that states actually pass in the course of a year or a legislative session, and you compare that what Congress does, states are far more efficient than Congress. I mean, it may be a relative scale we're talking about, but, you know, there is a certain amount that bureaucracy can slow things down. But the states are doing far better in terms of passing a lot of laws, even with whatever constraints there are, than Congress. And obviously, there are a lot of variables at play, but, you know, I don't think that the states are necessarily being as inefficient as it feels like they may be in terms of getting things done.
Everything's relative, right?
Right.
So we'll go to Mike in Freeport now. He's calling in. Mike, hi. What's your question?
Hey, I just had a comment, I guess, about executive sessions in regards to various state agencies and state or local boards. I think that when they go into executive session, you notice that they claim that they're talking about a amendment to a contract or whatnot. I think those executive sessions should be recorded by either video or audio, or at the very least, note-taking, and made public as soon as the subject that they're discussing is no longer, I don't know what the word is for it, no longer need to be private or whatnot.
Sig, is anything on the requirements there?
I think that's a great idea, and that would cure the problem of secrecy at executive sessions. There is concern for some types of executive sessions, which are discussing, for example, some highly personal or deeply personal sensitive matter for a public employee, a health issue, or something of that sort. Creating a record of that could get out later, maybe even inadvertently, is a concern. But executive sessions are a big problem because the example you give would not be a proper subject for an executive session. Discussing an amendment to a public contract generally is not something that can be discussed in executive session. That should be discussed in the light of day with open to the public, so people can find out what the town proposes to spend and what services it thinks it needs.
Okay, we have one last email from Al in Old Town. Are there laws preventing public officials from wearing body cams while doing the public's business?
No, actually, police departments have been adding body cams in Maine. There is a question about the extent to which body cams or dash cams, just dash cams mounted on police cruisers or public records. Those are public records, and they have been made public by judges in the past when doing so would not interfere with an ongoing investigation. But there's nothing in Maine law that would prevent public officials from wearing, you know, body cams, and police departments in Maine are going to that.
Keisha, do you hear anything about this in other states?
In terms of body cams, I mean, that's a big issue around the country. I couldn't tell from the question whether it was asking about an elected official themselves wearing one, which is an interesting concept. But I think in general, the question about executive session minutes, to go back a question, there are some places where they do make those public after the fact, once the issue that was being talked about. Sometimes it's, you know, redacted if it's talking about personnel issues, but certainly that has been used in some places.
Okay, well, thanks. And Mal, did you want to comment on that as well?
Well, body cams has been a huge issue around the country. When are they used? What are the policies for using them? But I can tell you that here in Maine, for example, the state police have dashboard cams and are talking about possibly going to body cams. But those dashboard cams, they really like them. Not the current chief who just got named, but his predecessor told me several stories where they had complaints about a particular trooper who was supposedly, you know, arrogant and said improper things to a person that they pulled over. And when they confronted the person with the actual video of what happened and the audio from the video of what happened, all of a sudden there was no complaint. So it really helps protect the police from false claims, as well as providing evidence of what really happened during an incident.
Okay, so much that falls under the topic of transparency, but we're out of time. Keisha, Sig, Mal, Thank you all for joining us today. Keisha Weir is state politics editor with the Center for Public Integrity. Sig Schutz is a partner with Preddy Flaherty, and he's a First Amendment attorney. And Mal Leary is president of the National Freedom of Information Coalition, and he's a political correspondent for Maine Public. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had additional help from John Keimel. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Tomorrow on the program, Maine's Secretary of State, Matt Dunlap. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.